It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Bob Maurer with Manduca Trading. We'll talk markets in a moment. First off, drought monitor, drought coverage, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
The overall drought coverage during the five-week period ending February 3rd increasing from 42.8 to 44.5%, a 1.7 percentage point increase. Each week during January, we saw drought coverage somewhere between 42 and 45% of the country. Using the parameters and guidelines that are used in creating the U.S. Drought Monitor, historical drought coverage should hover around 20% for the United States or for anywhere for that matter. And so we have been looking at this elevated drought coverage, roughly two times the normal expected drought coverage, going all the way back to mid-September when we saw drought coverage creeping above 40%. It has been there every week ever since.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest, Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. Okay, Bob, quiet day of trade on Monday. And so I guess the question is, are we just waiting on the latest WASDE from USDA?
Yeah, a bit softer tone in the row crops and wheat today, but market's only lower by maybe a penny to a nickel or so, depending on which one you're looking at here. Oilseed products, soy meal was down about $6. Bean oil futures up about 140 points or so. And I really think maybe not a big news day today. We did get some bullish news from soybeans, but it wasn't really able to sustain any kind of gain off it, that being sales that were announced this morning. Top of traders' minds will be the report coming out tomorrow. Expectations for the 25-26 U.S. grain ending stocks and also the 25-26 world grain ending stocks. Then also we've got the 25-26 world crop production, specifically focused on Brazil and Argentina. I won't go through all the data. Most of it is expected to be a push. I think the outliers are that the U.S. grain ending stocks for wheat is expected to have tightened up a bit, whereas the corn here in the ending stocks in the U.S. is expected to loosen up a little bit. And also down in Brazil, in terms of world crop production numbers, again, month on month, looking for more of a push out of Argentina for corn and soybeans, but a tweak higher for corn and soybeans in terms of their production relative to last month. So we'll see how those numbers actually all come out. Beyond that, we go back to some of the push and pull happening in the markets on a week-to-week basis. For corn, market has basically been in a roughly 20 to 25 cent range for a number of months now. It hasn't found a catalyst to either push it out through the upside nor break it down through the downside there. It remains, in my opinion, supported but structurally capped. On the bull side of the equation, you've got export demand, which has been notably strong and continues to outperform expectations. Ethanol usage has also been a relatively stable domestic demand base, and that's helping. In terms of our competitors, like I just mentioned, with Argentina and Brazil's numbers coming out, at least the USDA's expectations for their crop production, we need to keep an eye on there. We've got the expectations that there's going to be some weather-related losses in Argentina. And, of course, you've got the uncertainty surrounding Brazil's safrinha corn crop. And, you know, that's a little bit early to tell at the moment, but obviously that's going to be top traders' minds as the next couple few months evolve to see how that crop comes along. On the bear side of the equation, the market is kind of constrained by large U.S. and global inventories. Obviously, this is going to soften any kind of urgency from buyers and, you know, potentially limit speculation on the long side of the equation that could hamper any kind of move to the upside here. You've got the Brazilian production strength. You got farmers selling too. So not only do I, but also I get a bunch of information from my various clearing firms, and there's a lot of advisories going out at this time to either do cash sales or get short on the board there to hedge with this rally that we've seen in some of the markets. So that's definitely a factor. We'll see what kind of producer selling continues to evolve here. Bottom line, basically for corn, it looks like it's going to stay in this range-bound two-sided market until some kind of really decisive and strong enough catalyst comes along to either, like again, pop it up into new higher levels or break it down into new lower levels. In terms of wheat, I think the play there, it looks structurally heavy. There's global supply, abundance pretty much everywhere it seems. Russia and the broader Black Sea area, they remain the dominant suppliers to the world market. Their prices have consistently undercut U.S. prices, and obviously that's going to limit our export opportunities. While the U.S. exports have shown some year-over-year improvement, it's coming off a relatively weak baseline, and it hasn't been enough to sufficiently evolve into tightening global balance sheets, let's put it that way. Bullish influences, every now and then you might get some kind of episode that helps pop the market up a little bit. It could be a tailwind from corn and soybeans having a moment to the upside there. It could also be geopolitical risks, which seem to be a constant risk in these markets these days. You got logistical constraints that could trigger some short-term price spikes, but again, these aren't things that seem to me that they'll be lasting, so it seems like it's more of a market which sell the rally market rather than look for any kind of build on the long side of the equation over some period of time. And then for soybeans, really this market's driven by, you know, let's call it sentiment at the moment, okay? So we did get some news events last week, especially from the executive branch here in the United States, and looked like there was something evolving in terms of a continued deal with China to induce them to continue to buy our soybeans in particular. And I think that is definitely welcome to the market. I want to see that happen every day, but you know, it's just one of those things where it's going to be enough to sustain the gains. And you know, we saw that rally that happened a couple months ago and really just kind of petered out rather quickly. So I think there's suspicion on any kind of strong move to the upside without some consistent, really consistent sales data. On the supply side, South America is still dominant. They are harvesting a large crop with strong yields, and they remain significantly cheaper than the U.S. So it's hard to argue that the value shopper should be coming to the United States when it is cheaper down there in South America at the moment. So obviously that's going to be limiting our exports. Argentina, they experienced some weather stress earlier in the season. We'll see if these recent rains they've gotten have stabilized their production expectations. That's a remains-to-be-seen scenario. China really is the central wild card. We'll see if they continue to buy, even though they're paying up. And then really, again, for soybeans, the bottom line is it's seeing some kind of momentum-driven rally against a fundamentally well-supplied marketplace. So we'll see how that all plays out. So not exactly like wheat, but kind of the same story, or maybe rallies are to be sold. So we'll see how this plays out. We will get the USDA numbers tomorrow for the WASDE report, and we'll take it from there.
Bob Mowers with Manduca Trading in Chicago. It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Our guest today, Bob Mauer, Manduca Trading. Bob, cattle market a little higher, but really no big moves to start the week, even though we hit cash trade last week at 245. Thoughts?
Yeah, a little bit of spark today in the live cattle futures, along with the feeder cattle futures, whereas in the hog futures, a little bit of softness. Basically, if we look at them one by one here, start with the cattle market, I mean, it continues to be structurally supported by those tight supply conditions that everybody knows about has been watching these markets. We got slaughter levels and overall beef production running below last year. On the cash cattle side of the equation, prices are firm and the beef cutout values have been relatively resilient. So this is definitely reflecting steady demand and limited availability. Don't forget also that we are February 9, and even though the temperatures are supposed to dip yet again and give us a seemingly never-ending dose of winter, at some point the weather's going to turn warmer and grills are going to open and summer's going to start. So we'll start seeing some seasonally stronger spring and summer consumption work its way into the market also. On the other side of that equation, working against a sustained rally in prices would be maybe the heavier carcass weights. They're helping to offset the reduced slaughter. And there's some concerns about feed availability, especially in some of the drought-affected regions. So we'll see if that uncertainty works its way into the markets also. Demand is the key swing factor. Current retail and food service demand has been adequate to support the prices, I believe. But those elevated costs, especially if you go to the restaurant, you'll see a lot of people with sticker shock. We'll see how that, see if that continues to be absorbed, those high prices. We'll see how that plays out. In terms of the hog market, this one seems like it's more balanced. If you look at the chart for hogs, it looks pretty good. There's no doubt about it. We are sustaining the gains that we saw over the last month or so. That's a good thing. I don't really know if either side really has any kind of strong conviction beyond the moves that we've already seen. We've got limited feeder pig availability. That's bullish. Steady improvement in the cash index. That's bullish. Export demand and stable feed costs have also helped keep the producer margins intact. That's a good thing. But working against it a bit is the larger slaughter numbers and relatively ample pork supplies, and kind of similar to beef these days with the higher prices that we're seeing in the pork markets. You know, it's going to be sensitive to consumer demand, and we'll see if it's going to be sustainable. I mean, net-net for the hog market, it looks to be, in my opinion, more of a range-bound, maybe a modest bullish bias, even still at these prices. So we'll see how that all plays out over the next weeks or so. So again, really it's a factor on the bullish side of the equation, the limited feeder pig supplies. You got the firm cash hog prices, like I mentioned. Similar seasonal demand expectations, improving consumption is expected, you know, into the spring and early summer. Then you've got the stable to improving export demand. That's helping things on the bull side of the equation. And then feed cost stability. And then working against that, in brief here, you got the large hog slaughter levels, heavy front end supplies. That's working its way into the marketplace, but so far being absorbed. And then you've got sensitivity to the consumer price resistance, which we'll always be keeping an eye out for. So far, so good on the pork market sustaining the gains that it's seen, especially relative to the beef prices being at those lofty levels. We'll see how this plays out over the next week or two.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Bob Maurer, Manduka Trading. Bob, where do we find you?
Yeah, you can pick up the phone, give me a call. Number is 312-987-2053. If I can't get to the phone, I'm likely chatting with a customer. So just leave a message real quick and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Otherwise, you can reach me via email at bmaurer@manducatrading.com. That's B-M-A-U-R-E-R @manducatrading.com, or come visit the website at www.myfuturesadvisor.com.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
USDA's February State Stories, courtesy of the National Agricultural Statistics Service, features the latest on winter wheat condition by reporting states.
Most states reported fairly flat wheat condition ratings as compared to both the previous month, end of December, and also the final national report of the year back in late November.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey uses top winter wheat production state Kansas as an example.
Coming in on January 31st, with 61% of the winter wheat crop rated in good to excellent condition. That is actually up 1 point from a month ago at the end of December. And it does reflect that even though there was bitter cold and sub-zero temperatures, that most of the state had a protective snow cover during that Arctic outbreak in late January.
There are concerns, however, for winter wheat in the plains from Nebraska north with lack of insulating snow cover to protect against bitter cold conditions. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.